from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Good morning. Happy Tuesday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. I got to admit, I feel a bit like it's Friday today because I'm going to be off the rest of the week. So I'm in an especially
Where are you going, Ursula? Where are you going? Where are you going? Let's jump all in your business.
Okay, we're going to get in my business, and I'm totally cool with that. I'm going to get on a plane. Tomorrow, my son is turning 21, and we are going to celebrate his official entry into adulthood, 21, and we're going to Vegas as a family.
What?
So are
going to... Long live Mark is going to Vegas?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's going to... My favorite way to travel is with all four of us as a family unit, and so I'm going to enjoy every single minute of it. Although I heard it's over 110 degrees in Vegas.
So what about that? What's the plan on that? Do you guys go sit by the pool? What do you guys do?
Well, I got to sit by the shade and then jump in the pool, sit by the shade, and then, you know, indoor activities.
I don't know what that's like.
You lived in Vegas, G. You know exactly what we're going to be doing.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, and my older son is like, oh, I need to show him this, and this. My younger son has never experienced Vegas, not even...
Now that's
as a young
be cool.
person, so this is going to be very different for him. Yeah,
that's going to be big. Bro, got to be excited about that.
Yes, they're very excited to bond together.
Hey, Ursula, I did live in Vegas. I really did.
Yes.
And guess what? I didn't do when it was 100 something degrees.
You did not go on the sunshine.
I didn't lay by the pool. That's what I didn't do. All right, let's get to it. Three things that all of you guys need to know.
Number one.
And this is something we bring up frequently on the show, the critical need for affordable housing and either the lack of solutions or delays in doing something to solve the problem. And now we're learning that single family home neighborhoods in Tacoma will stay that way for a while longer or maybe even forever. So if you live in Tacoma and that is something that you want, this is great news for you. The News Tribune says that a massive rezoning plan that was slated to face a final city council decision by the end of this year will be pushed back indefinitely, and the city council is going to allow more time for public comment. Just to set the scene, 90% of the residential property in Tacoma is currently zoned for single-family homes only. And, Chef, correct me if I'm wrong, the goal was to... I think change that entirely and basically make.
They want it to be 62% low to 38%.
Yeah, and let me explain a little bit about what that means. So basically, that 62%, they would want to allow duplexes, triplexes, townhomes, that sort of thing in a lot of those currently single family zone neighborhoods, and then the 38%. So places near like transit hubs. Traffic corridors and centers of the city, they would allow a medium scale housing. So that would be multifamily units up to three stories. So basically three story apartments, townhomes, etc.
Okay. So it could dramatically change the look of Tacoma, or would it? Okay. So that is the question. And we had kind of a heated discussion during our morning meeting, and I want to bring it to the table now because so much of our show, and I think it's something that is unique to our show, is that we often fight for the I'm going to say the little guy, but we want to always fight in terms of, hey, you've got to look at it from this perspective.
Right.
But I also wanted to point out that from my perspective, not that I'm not a little guy, I totally, you know, will fight for people who have been for so long, you know, without. But I also want to acknowledge that there are people who have homes and who've owned homes that are worried about what this would do and how dramatically this would change the neighborhood. So I wanted to kind of discuss that because I'm in favor of creating more affordable housing. For me, when I look at what that means, I look at the busy corridors. I look at, for example, in my neighborhood where they're putting light rail. It totally makes sense that they got rid of a bunch of houses, by the way, that were owned in some cases by really crummy landlords. And they got rid of them and put up big residential units. Now, unfortunately, they were not affordable housing. And we need to use those kind of spaces and that kind of property for more affordable housing, where it's close to the transit centers, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Let's just talk about, we're going to stay with Tacoma. And you just got, you guys just gave the numbers of 90%. 90% single family and only 10% multifamily when it comes to how the residential land use has happened. The number one thing that this would do, the number one thing right away, it would help with the increase of supply, right?
Absolutely.
There is a huge demand, but there's not enough supply. And when there's not enough supply, the cost goes up. And when there is more supply, there is the potential of the cost going down. It's just simple. Let's just keep it very simple. And the 90% single family and the 10% multifamily, you're talking about years and years of the way things have been done, if you will, with the head start for so many people to get their generations of families dug into these things. Pass it down. Pass it down. Keep this. Let's keep the neighborhood together. Let's keep, as I've heard this before, let's keep the character of the neighborhood the same. So, yes, this needs to change. This needs to change right now. And that's a lot of things that are happening in this country. This is why, if you will, we're starting to get behind. We're starting to get behind because there's so many things that we have to fix. It's so many things that we have to undo to make things fair for people. Now, for everyone who owns a home, everybody's out there, oh, great. That's awesome. That is fantastic. But I just want to make it very clear that back in the day, the baby boomers, I'm not taking shots at baby boomers. I'm not doing that. But I am going to go ahead and call it like it is. It was easier to go to college because college was cheaper. It was easier to get into a home because owning a home, getting into homes was easier. It's not like that today. Schools are expensive, crazy expensive. Student loan debt through the roof. It is impossible to get into a home and buy one yourself if you are someone who is 20s, early late 20s or something like that, unless you're in tech and some of these jobs. And then the last part of it is, Ursula, is rent right now is going through the roof. How can we decrease that? We can decrease that by making more. Let's get more of the supply. I was in it at that.
You made excellent points. And so let's go back to creating affordable housing. When we are putting these big multiplex complexes up, it can't be more of the expensive, you know, $2,500 a month rent, which is only for a certain market and does not do anything. So you're creating more units, but they're not affordable. So what could create more affordable housing would be to create more incentives for developers to create that kind of housing. Right?
Right.
I mean, otherwise, if there's not enough money for them, what's going to be their incentive?
There can't be any incentive. And look, I'm not saying I'm an expert when it comes to money. My knowledge is simple, some simple monopoly. You know what I'm saying? Like that's, I just keep it simple. Okay. It costs this. This is what you get. I'm not trying to be an expert on it. But at the same time, Ursula, with people that are building homes, we can't ask folks that the cost of lumber, of all the costs that occurs. How in the world are they going to make money if they have to put aside and say, hey, we're going to give affordable housing? They need help to be able to do that too. And one last point I want to make about affordable housing, and I got to tell you something. Affordable housing, when I hear that term, I'm going to be honest with you. It makes my skin crawl. Mm-hmm. I don't like affordable.
Yeah, well, how do you define that? Affordable to whom?
Let me tell you why affordable housing I just don't like. Because I remember, Ursula, in the 80s when my grandma moved into this, it was called the Big Building in Chicago off of 51st and King Drive. And it was a new building. And my grandma was on, she had Section 8 housing, okay? I remember how nice the building was, Ursula. It was super nice. It was nice. They had a security guard. And I mean, it was, the grass was green. It was amazing. All I remember, we were going over there and my dad was like, oh, this is amazing. This is outstanding. It took about 5 to 10 years for that to didn't look amazing anymore. Why? Because just because you have, quote, affordable housing, just because you can live there, how do you get wages to make money? You need to be able to make money to keep up with these places. So that's why the affordable housing is great, but they need livable wages. They need to make jobs easier, more money to be able to afford to maintain these places.
Well, before we wrap up, so I guess the point would be that now they have moved the decision back. They've pushed it back indefinitely. They want more time for public comment. If you live in Tacoma and you have a stake in this and you want your voice heard, you need to make sure to take advantage of that opportunity. And yeah. I'm okay with them delaying it only because we did just come out of a pandemic. They had this plan. Maybe it wasn't fully vetted or had a chance for everybody to hear it. So yeah. Now you do, but absolutely, and I don't want it to come across ever as I am not in favor of affordable housing or some kind of rezoning. I think it just needs to be very thoughtful and with everyone in mind.
Number two.
All right. Speaking of affordability, there is something that is happening for a lot of us parents out there that will make life a little bit easier. So you might have received a letter from the mail on the IRS. They just started sending those out, and it's actually one that you want to see. So starting July 15th, 90% of American parents are going to start receiving monthly checks of $250 to $300 per child, depending on their age, as advance payments on this expanded child tax credit. Now, G, I think that this is a great thing, but you brought up something yesterday that we should probably address, and that is why is this happening and what are the effects going to be?
Right. And what I brought up, first of all, shout out to everybody that's getting ready to be getting a check. It's fantastic. It is phenomenal. This is going to be great to help out with your child care, whatever the case might be. But I think the underlying reason as to why they're doing that is because some of the main reasons why millennials and Gen Zs and why they aren't having kids is because they can't afford to. They can't afford the child care and all that kind of stuff. So this might be an incentive. And as a matter of fact, I talked to someone yesterday who now says that her friends is like, now knowing that I have a possibility of getting a certain amount of money a month, that might help when it comes to childcare. I think we already have a issue in this country where folks aren't having kids. I'm not saying this is the end all be all, but I do think it will entice some folks to maybe we will have another baby.
Oh, no.
Is that a bad thing, though?
Wait, is that
a bad thing? Because every time something like this gets brought up, it's usually in the context of like, oh, if the government's passing out money, it's going to be an incentive for people to just pop out kids left and right.
Okay, So let's stop that narrative, first of all. I totally disagree with that. Anyone who thinks that this $250 or $300 per month is going to be the life changer. I mean, it is going to be a big difference maker, but that's not going to pay your bills to have more children.
There's
more that goes to having children. So I don't think that's the goal is to entice people to have more children. No, the goal is to entice people to go back to work or to be able to work or to be able to find childcare, because childcare right now is exorbitant and excludes a lot of people from being able to work or to raise their family properly or, you know, whatever it is. And so it's kind of a lifeline, because if you've checked the cost of childcare, it's out of control.
Two questions for you, Ursula. Number one, have we not been talking about in this country that people aren't having kids? The millennials, Gen Zs, they aren't having kids. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. So that's accurate. Number two, Are you telling me that all of a sudden now there are laws in this, there are things that they're making in this country, they're trying to make it easy for people to be able to make things better when the federal minimum wage hasn't moved up?
Yes. And so there are people who are in Congress who are trying to correct that. Yes.
Trying? It's $7.25. It's $7.25. Trying?
I know. And so... this is going to be into a whole, who's blocking it? Who's making it difficult? Should everyone go? I mean, that's a whole nother conversation, which we've had. The minimum wage, absolutely, at a federal level, needs to go up dramatically. Should it be the same in every state? That's to be argued.
So all I'm saying, I know it sounds far-fetched, but maybe it's not as far-fetched as some might believe, because we all agree that the Gen Z and millennials, they aren't having kids. They're not doing what we used to do back in the day. Gen X, baby boomers, people coming right out of high school,
but I'm
babies
good
at
with
18.
That. I don't want my
are
child.
You?
I don't no, want no, no. my are young you? Sons to have children right now when they're not ready to have children. Absolutely
I agree with
not.
You. No. You're right. But are we good with knowing, like, yo, we really aren't? Well, unless we talk about immigration. If we do it that way.
Wait, what?
Well, you're saying if we're facing a population crisis, a replacement crisis, right, where there are way too many old people, not enough young people. Yes, two ways to solve that. Immigration or people have more kids.
Are you okay with a population crisis? Are you okay with a population crisis?
We're far from a... Gee, I love your yes or no's, but we are so far away from a population crisis right now. We do have people who are living longer, and we do have people who are living longer and not prepared to live longer, and we do have young people who I think are making the right choice by deciding to put off having children so that they are not in a position of having to raise them just barely scraping by. I think those are wise decisions. I think our younger generation are making better decisions than we did. How's that? How's that for a positive spin?
Younger generation doesn't have a choice, because if they don't, federal minimum wage is $7.25, and it costs $50,000 a year to go to college. The younger generation doesn't have a choice.
And we need to deal and continue to hammer on those problems individually. Yes.
Number three.
Okay, we're not going to. What's so funny is everyone thinks that you and I agree on everything. I think we're showing right now that we do not. Okay, just real quick. Do you know that Girl Scouts are having a hard time selling their Girl Scout cookies? Did you hear that they have 15 million boxes of unsold cookies? As in lots of Thin Mints that they don't know what to do. What should they do? Did you?
Well, go get your Thin Mints. Start advertising for that. As a matter of fact, Governor Jay Inslee, you hear it. Go ahead and start offering Thin Mints.
Thank you.
For going to get your vaccines. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, have you guys put Thin Mints in the freezer?
Yes.
And then, ooh.
And by the way, for the Girl Scouts, the good news is those Thin Mints have a long shelf life. So I think they're good. I think we're going to be okay.
I'm mostly upset they haven't offered discounts. I saw nothing about discounts. Like, I want to see. Normally, if a store has like a crate load of extra cookies, you'd see those things for $1. I want 20 boxes for $20 in my closet right now. Lasts me about 3 weeks.
Hey, coming up next, Dr. Angela Rasmussen. She is going to join us. She was going to join us at 9:30. But technical difficulties happen. But we have her coming up next. It's time to ask her some questions about what is currently going on when it comes to COVID-19. It's Gian Ursula.
Welcome back to the Gian Ursula Show. Thank you so much for hanging out with us on this Tuesday morning. Our state is inching closer and closer to being 70% vaccinated, but if you haven't gotten your second shot or received the single dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine, you may want to get another shot soon.
The Delta variant is now taking hold in the U.S. 10% of new cases now and doubling every 2 weeks. It's the most contagious variant yet, even infecting those who are partially vaccinated.
And doctors say that Delta variant isn't only more contagious.
The scary part of that also is that if we look at India and China, the folks who have the Delta variant are actually sicker. They're higher risk of getting ICU admissions and a higher risk of death.
So we need to get more information about this Delta variant that is ravaging India and whether you will need a booster shot. And joining us now is our favorite virologist, Dr. Angela Rasmussen. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning, Ursula.
Thank you so much for joining us. So tell us about this new Delta variant. I know I was following your Twitter feed yesterday, and you were tweeting quite a bit about it. What do we need to know?
Yeah, so the main thing that people really should know about the Delta variant is that, to me, as a virologist, this is probably the most concerning variant that has emerged so far. But what people really should know about it is that we do have a solution for it, and that is that full vaccination, a complete regimen of your vaccine shots, is very, very protective against the Delta variant, over 90% protective. So people really should know, first and foremost, if you're worried about the Delta variant or just in general, and you haven't been fully vaccinated yet, you should go out and get your vaccine and make sure that you complete the vaccine regimen. But what people should also know about the Delta variant is that, as you said, it is more transmissible, which means if you're around somebody who is infected with it, you are more likely to be infected with it yourself if you're not vaccinated. It also, unfortunately, is pretty good at infecting people who have only been partially vaccinated. They do have a little more protection against it than people who are unvaccinated, but it still poses a great risk to people who are only partially vaccinated if they've only gotten their first shot. So that's why, again, it's really important that people do go out and complete their vaccination regimens to make sure that they are as protected as possible from this. Now, one thing that's less clear to me, it's definitely more transmissible, but it's less clear to me that it's actually more pathogenic. Now, you mentioned that in India that they have observed that people with this variant are more likely to be put into the ICU, but I think that it's really still, the jury is out on that in terms of what were those people's pre-existing risk factors. There's not a lot of people in India. A very small proportion of the population has actually been vaccinated. So people there are going to be more susceptible. And that could potentially explain why that risk of hospitalization and ICU admission is higher. But the key message to take home is don't get the Delta variant. Take precautions if you're not fully vaccinated, and get fully vaccinated as soon as you possibly can.
Dr. Rasmussen, you mentioned, I heard you say two doses. And what does that mean for Johnson & Johnson?
So this is something that I have a lot of questions about, given that I myself had the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. We don't have a lot of data on how protective the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is against the Delta variant. My concern, not that the Johnson & Johnson vaccine isn't going to protect you against severe disease. We already know that Johnson & Johnson does protect people very well against severe disease, and there's no reason why it wouldn't against the Delta variant. My concern is whether or not you would be more susceptible to breakthrough infections, being that there is not a booster shot. Now, one of the things that the booster shots do in terms of your immune system is they basically just give your immune system, the cells of your immune system, the B cells that make antibodies, a reminder of what they are looking out for. And so those antibodies that they make can basically be even better. They can be even more neutralizing and capable of rendering the virus non-infectious. There's no second shot with the Johnson & Johnson. So my question, and this is really a question to the NIH and to our public health officials, is it time to think about recommending a booster shot of an mRNA vaccine for people who've gotten Johnson & Johnson to reduce their risk of being infected with it or having a breakthrough infection even further?
Real quick, from the start, from the get-go, and I don't know if you addressed this in your answer right there, but from the very beginning, we all knew or we have seen that Johnson & Johnson, the effective rate was at like, I think late 60-something percent. It wasn't even 70 or 80%. Is that correct?
Yeah, so that's correct. But it's really important also when you're talking about that number to recognize that these clinical trials were done in different ways. And Johnson & Johnson looked at symptomatic COVID-19, but it also looked at severe symptomatic COVID-19, whereas Pfizer and Moderna just looked at symptomatic COVID-19 overall. So while Johnson & Johnson was 60% efficacious in the trial at preventing all symptomatic COVID-19, including mild, it was very, very effective, right on the same level as Moderna and Pfizer at preventing severe COVID-19, which early on was definitely what we needed. We need to keep people out of the hospital. We need to keep people from dying. But now that we're still looking at spread, and there are many places in the U.S. where people are still not vaccinated. We also need to be thinking about protecting people against infection, and a booster could potentially improve that.
Dr. Rasmussen, I've got to say, and I'm just going to make a comment, but I have a very important question I need to ask, too. Just listening to what you said about Johnson & Johnson, knowing the issues that Johnson & Johnson had with the blood clots, and then some of the other issues in production, and then now we might need a booster. That sounds to me like a lot of reasons for people to think twice, in particular when dealing with that particular vaccine. Okay, and that's just a comment, but I have to ask you about this other thing, which is important. The CDC scheduled an emergency meeting last week to take another look at myocarditis in children, and specifically, are there any links to these heart issues that more than 200 cases now have been reported, and if there is a link to the vaccine? From your perspective, and you are a virologist, but from your perspective, how do you assure parents, or can you, when you're looking at whether you vaccine your children or not, and you hear about these heart issues?
Yeah, well, so two things. First, to address your prior comments, I still don't regret getting Johnson & Johnson. I'm very glad to have gotten this vaccine. It's going to be really helpful for a lot of other people who can't necessarily make it to two vaccine appointments. So just addressing that, I think that there's still a place in the landscape for Johnson & Johnson. It is a very good vaccine. But in terms of reassuring parents about the myocarditis issues, I would just say that, you know, all drugs, all vaccines do have side effects. The reason why the ACIP is having an emergency meeting is to try and understand whether that is caused by the vaccine and how dangerous it is. Because myocarditis sounds scary because it's the heart, and it's a very medical clinical term.
Yes.
But it's certainly not even necessarily something that's going to cause long-term illness, much less severe illness. So I think people just, you know, they should acknowledge that these kind of things do happen with any drug, with any vaccine. It's all about a risk-benefit analysis, and to just try to be patient until we know a little bit more about it and what the risk is to children. Now, the risk of myocarditis might be minor for kids, and as far as I know, no kids have died. No kids have even gotten severely ill, as far as I'm aware. I could be wrong about that, but it's a low risk, even if it is caused by the vaccine. The risk to kids from having COVID is potentially low, but the risk of long COVID appears to be higher than we thought it was. And the risk to children is not non-existent. Children have died from COVID-19. So it's going to be about a risk-benefit analysis. And for now, I mean, I would not recommend anything different. If I had children who were ages 12 to 15, I would still get them vaccinated.
Appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And I ask you this because these are the questions that we are getting from our listeners, or some of the sentiments too that we often get. And so I just wanted to bring those to you because I knew you'd be able to answer them. Thank you, Dr. Rasmussen. We appreciate your time.
It's always a pleasure, Ursula. Take care.
Tell Taz hello.
Coming up next, it's time for Scenarios. You guys are listening to The Gene Ursula Show. It is The Gene Ursula Show. Happy Tuesday to all of you guys. Andrew, did you play that because you know it's Ice Cube's birthday?
Actually, no. I didn't.
Wow, you're brilliant. Yeah. You know what? We don't give Andrew enough credit for his song choices. He fantastic. Keeps us going. Okay. Yeah.
You think Ice Cube got that platinum plan together? Yeah. Let's get to scenarios brought to you by Farrah.com.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what? So what? So what's the scenario?
Ursula, I wasn't going to read this email, but I'll try it anyways. My girlfriend is a witch. And I'm not being mean. She's actually a witch, as in she's into witchcraft. One of her friends got her involved in it a few weeks ago, and since then she has bought a bunch of books, spent hours and hours studying it online, and has joined some pretty weird groups on Facebook to talk about it. lately, she's changed her wardrobe. It's all dark, mostly black, and now she's convinced that she's able to cast spells. And she claims that she's been doing it in small ways, and it really works. I gotta tell you, it's bugging me. But now, it's starting to freak me out. I thought it would pass, but I've noticed that she's starting to change. She's starting to collect weird things. I'm noticing her have this fascination, if you will, for birds, frogs,
okay, here's
little
G's,
weird things.
Here is G's embellishment, if you will. Birds. Okay, no. That's you.
Okay, okay.
Busted.
You, okay, wait. No, hold on. Ursula, usually you bust me. This time you didn't bust me.
Oh, really?
You didn't bust me. She really started the collecting, yeah, and mess around with birds and frogs. I'll send it to you afterwards. And then doing weird things in the garage. I don't know if she's, like, talking to them, having conversations, but these things just seem a little weird. But this whole thing is getting to me. I don't want to lose her. I really like her. I just want her back. I want her the way that she used to be. I didn't sign up for this. What should I do? Is this something to worry about? 98973 is the State Roof and Text line. Ursula, we only got a few minutes. You're up the back.
Oh,
first.
It is something to worry about because it's bugging you. So you need to... I'm going to borrow a page from Chris Martin. You need to go out and have a meal or have a drink and talk about it. Okay, this is a big change in behavior. This is not someone... And for people who are into witchcraft, you know, more power to you. Not my thing. And that would be very hard for me if that wasn't something that my partner was into and suddenly they become obsessed with it. I'd be, and it makes me uncomfortable. There's just no getting over that unless you can work it out or ask, hey, you know, where's this coming from? Can we, you know, kind of reel it in? Or maybe not. If she, you know, if that's her thing and you're not willing to jump on with her, then that's not for you.
Chef?
Okay. What is she doing with the birds and the frogs? Is she pinning them to boards? Is she removing hearts? You're down with the patriarchy, witch girlfriend. I don't know, man. That's highly concerning to me. And it's not necessarily because of the type of lifestyle that she's engaging in, but because you're not a part of it as well. One, I would be highly worried that someday you're going to find a little voodoo doll that looks like you. And if she's into this long enough... she might actually be able to use the thing. That being said, on a more serious note, I believe the Bible says that one should not be unequally yoked in a relationship. This is basically the equivalent of your girlfriend picking up a new religion and you not participating in that. I think it's difficult to be in that kind of a relationship. So unless you're getting into it, you might want to get out.
I've noticed that this is how it goes. The two of you, in real life, you guys stay in relationships longer than me. But in scenarios, I stay in relationships longer than you guys.
Because scenarios is just a scenario. It ain't real life.
And because we're picky, we're still with our partners.
So in this case, run. This is just the beginning. If all of a sudden things were cool and then they started to get into something where they're going out to the garage, then they're... hanging out with little animals that they didn't used to be, run. This is just the beginning. The next thing you know, she's dressing in all black. You're going to come home. The walls are going to be painted all black. You're going to come home.
There are
going to start
people
eating
who are into witchcraft and witches who are going to tell you we're all wrong on this.
Okay, well, they come on to the show. Let's interview you. Let's talk about it. Coming up next, it's Agree to Disagree. It's G and Ursula.